Hello, everyone, and welcome to edition 144 of the NRF1 podcast, your Formula One podcast broadcast straight out of Norfolk, UK, and the best thing to come out of this county since Team Lotus. And welcome to the new season, our sixth, and we are very excited. Welcome back to all our lovely listeners, and a big green light to you if you're a new recruit to the pod. We thank you for your time and your ears, and we hope to hear from your good selves over the course of what promises to be a stellar year in the sport we all love. You'll hopefully notice, he says, that we've added a few updates for the new season that will hopefully add a few tenths to our performance, DT. So some new voices as well, and more chances for you to get involved. There will be more podcasts too, although they should be shorter and more readily digestible, like a Taco Bell at the Circuit of the Americas. Rich, you like that one?
I like that one. I had tacos on Saturday, so.
Oh, apt.
Doesn't Taco Bell give you the squits?
Right, yeah, well, no, that's a nice taster of where this season's going.
It's just what I've heard.
Now, the big news is we do have a lovely partner for the new season. For 2017, the NRF1...
It's not Taco Bell, is it?
It's not Taco Bell, thank goodness, because that bit would have been cut out. For the 2017 season, the NRF1 podcast is brought to you in proud association with Grand Prix Racing Online, where racing is in your blood. You can sign up to the superb online racing game by visiting our website, nrf1.uk, and clicking on the graphic, or type into your browser gpro.net/nrf1, and no doubt we'll have plenty of fun and deals from the guys at GPro over the course of the year, and I suspect some of us may even start having a go on the game too. So on with the podcast, which is effectively our 2017 season preview, and I've got a delightful double act of NRF1 old hands with me. I hope they won't mind me calling them that. And we've got Dave on Cars, blogger and editor of Lotus Drivers Club Members Magazine, that's pretty much what it is, Chicane, David Tillier, otherwise known as DT. Good evening, Dave.
Hello, how are you doing?
Yeah, I'm good, thank you very much. Bubbly as always. You?
Yeah, not bad. Can't complain. No one would listen anyway.
Well, there you go. Well, especially if you have a Taco Bell. And anyway, yes. And we're also joined by, and the official title, Damon Hill and Williams fan, as well as Mustang owner, crucial detail, Richard Baxter. Rich, how are you and how was your winter?
I'm good. The winter was cold, as usual. But I've got a coat, so I'm all right.
Hey, that's all you need. It's all you need in the cold weather. I mean, there are probably people listening to this who have far colder winters than us in Norfolk, UK.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not going to say I'm a bit of a worse, really, but I like the summer, and what's better with Formula One?
Too true. I won't keep saying UK after Norfolk, by the way, but, you know, I feel like I should for the time being.
There is a Norfolk in America, isn't there? So
there is. You know, probably not just
America. We probably don't sound like we're from Norfolk in America, but
I wouldn't have thought so. I wonder how many other Norfolks there are in the world. Anyway, we digress. My name is Michael Bailey. I'm a sports journalist and sometime F1 correspondent, and as opposed to DT, who owns a Lotus, and Rich, who of course owns a Mustang, I own a Peugeot 206. So there we go. Great stuff. Before we do get into testing, which of course we had the first test at Barcelona has been and gone. In fact, the second test is almost upon us. It has been a huge winter for Formula One, hasn't it? Primarily, Bernie's gone, Liberty Media have taken over, Chase Carey is the main man, Ross Brawn is back involved and you know, effectively in charge of the sport as well. How are we all feeling about this? Are we excited? Is it weird that we won't have Bernie? Are we renewed optimism, or is it going to be the same old once they start scrapping over things?
Yeah, I think it's a bright new future in a way. From what I've seen anyway, it seems to be moving in the right direction. It's not night and day different, but little things like the fact that the drivers are now able to go out to the pit lane and do video. Apparently this is only going to be for testing, they won't be able to do it for the races, which is a bit of a shame, but at least that's showing that they're moving in the right direction. They're kind of starting to listen to what fans want, and fans want more engagement through social media and YouTube and whatnot, so that's really, really good. I'm quite excited for Ross Brawn to be involved, because he seems to be making all the right noises, and he understands the sport, he understands racing, he understands being a team owner, and he also understands being an engineer as well. So from those points of view, I think that's only going to be a good thing.
Are you going to miss Bernie?
Yes and no. I mean, he's, you can't deny that he's done some amazing things. You know, the sport would not be the sport that it is today without Bernie. Formula One was not a global mega sport before he kind of took over. And he is a massive character, or a tiny character, depending on which way you look at it.
But, casting aspersions there.
Well, it's not aspersions. He's short, isn't he?
Maybe that was me who was doing that.
I can't say if it's in proportion or not. But yeah, he brought a lot to the sport, and I think he will be missed in a way. But it was time for him to step aside. I would like to see him still at races. I think it'd be great to, you know, because he didn't hold back with his opinions. You know, sometimes they were a bit, you know, obvious, but sometimes he was quite sort of, you know.
Yes, I think he was very good at making stories. That was the thing that Bernie always was, and he was like a one-man PR machine, and not always great PR, but he was generating PR. It's going to be a little bit different now, isn't it, Rich?
Yeah, I mean, I'm personally delighted Ross Brawn's in. He's a well-respected character amongst fans, drivers and teams alike, I think, just because he's got so much experience. It's good to have him back in the sport, because he was missed for the years he took a break as well. But, I mean, Bernie, to be fair, he did a lot for the sport. I suppose you could say, particularly on the safety side of things, especially with the circuits, because they're always looking to improve those and make them better, which is great. And, you know, even it makes it better for the fans as well, if they've got better, safer areas for them to be. But I think he has had his time. He should have stopped a little while ago, really, to be honest. But it's going to be interesting to see how it goes, because, of course, in Russia, we had Bernie sitting alongside Putin in the race. Are we going to see Chase Carey sat there alongside Putin chatting about things, or...
Well, there are a lot of questions that are going to come up in terms of how this sport is now going to be run. And that's kind of the exciting thing, I suppose. It's very much like the start of the season. You never quite know what you're going to get at the start, which is what makes it exciting. If you get 5-10 rounds in and it's the pattern has emerged, it can sometimes get a little bit staid. So, again, we don't really know what they're going to do. I mean, we have got big rule changes for this season too, of course, haven't we? The cars are different. We've got much more aero ground effects. They're going to be wider, they're bigger, they look better.
Oh, they aren't. They're not sort of night and day better, because they are still... The rules are almost an evolution of last year's and the year before. So the cars have got some similarities, but the changes that have come in actually do make a big difference. The thing that most people are going to notice is the wheels are, the tyres more specifically, are much wider, which make the cars look much more aggressive. They've got rid of that stupid pram style rear wing that actually we've all gotten used to now, but when it first came out they looked ridiculous, and it's a sort of lower, wider, bit more like the cars from sort of the early and mid 2000s, especially sort of around the V10 era. And then they've changed the front wing. That's wider, a bit more aggressive. It's got that sort of pointed effect. And shark fins are back, which has caused a bit of debate. Some of them look really cool, like the ones on the Mercedes look pretty good. Then you've got the Force India, which just looks like a sail has been slapped on the side of the car.
That car in general looks shocking. So that makes me think that because Ross Brawn has already said, we might have to look at getting rid of these shark fins, possibly before the season starts, I think was suggested.
I think that would be a silly idea if they... It depends on how that changes how the cars are set up. Because if the teams have spent all of the winter thinking that they need that in order to make something work, then I think we should keep them. Ultimately, I think they look quite cool. And I quite like the little T-wings that we've got as well. Any little new aero device that someone's brought out that we haven't seen before, whether or not it looks ridiculous or not, I quite like the kind of the fact that they're thinking outside the box and they're doing, you know, as long as they don't go overboard like the, what was it, in the early 2000s they had those, are they the X-Wings they were called, where they basically came up from the side pods and sat really high up. They looked a bit stupid. But, you know, it's nice to see people sort of thinking outside the box and doing something different and not doing what they've done for the last however many years.
This is why the sport is down so much to opinions as well, because we will have a special season preview podcast with a certain someone with strong Formula One and Norfolk connections who hates shark fins and hated the little T-wings as well. So, you know, it's all about that, isn't it? I mean, Rich, shark fins?
I don't mind them as long as they've got a bit of style to them. Some of them is just a bit of square metal they've stuck on the back and you just think that's boring. And I think it was like Sauber, they decided to put theirs as black, so it was trying to not stand out. It's like, it's okay if the background's black, but if you're on a on a circuit or something where there's going to be colours in the background, it's not going to work. And
Red Bull did that with their nose, didn't they? Their little anti-nose, they just coloured it black so no one could see it.
Yeah. I mean, that's the thing that stands out to me most is the nose. That if you look at the Mercedes and Toro Rosso this season, they're very pretty cars, partly because of the nose has been rounded. Along on the others, you've got some very strange looking little bit sticking forwards, and especially the Force India, they've almost gone back to the 2012 season where you had the step in the nose. They've almost kind of done that and then put a bit on the front. It's an interesting take on the rules, definitely.
Yeah, it's a really good point, because when the Williams, I think the Williams was the first car we saw, and I was like, well, that surely that isn't going to be the nose, and it was basically the exact same as last year with this little ante. We're like, why? But it's not as bad as Caterham a few years ago, but
what we've got to remember is that the rules have changed about the width and the shape of the wing, but the way that the nose has to project forward and the height of it, I don't know the exact stuff, but I know that the reason that we had these little anteaters is so that the nose got to the required length and got down to the required height, and that we've still got those same issues here, and that's the best way a lot of the teams can get around trying to get the nose to that point, because otherwise it, for their particular setup, if they'd have made it a nice pretty wing or pretty nose section, it wouldn't have been as aerodynamically effective, and unfortunately the things that are effective aren't always pretty. But I think McLaren have done an interesting thing with their front nose, because they haven't got the little sort of anteater nose, have they? But they've got some quite interesting sort of vents down the side, and their front wing's quite ornate, so it's a shame the rest of the car's pretty awful.
The great thing about all this, though, is you can have this debate, but every single car, there's something different about it. There's not two that look identical. Mm. And sometimes we used to get that, in, you know, you think, oh, they're all the same, just different colours.
I don't know. Have you seen the picture of the Ferrari and the Haas put side by side? So they've taken the same picture from the same angle and then cut the two down the side. And it looks like basically Haas have just copied their homework.
Again. That was the issue last year as well. I mean, Red Bull, we should just touch on, have done something very interesting. There's like a hole in their sort of anteater nose, even, but it's not a direct hole because you're not allowed a direct hole. It's some sort of cooling thing. It's very interesting. If you have a look on the at the NRF1 on Twitter, that's our Twitter feed, we had Dan and Callum Springle having some good debates there. Two guys who know their engineering. There's some great stuff, and hopefully we'll have more from them over the course of the season too. Any other big rule changes we're looking forward to? It's much changed in terms of the races and the setup and things like that. I don't think that much has it really. All the rule changes seem to be around the cars and the aero more than anything else.
The tyre rules haven't changed, have they? Because I'm sure there was a thing I saw today, I think, about Paul Henbury saying that the drivers could go for an entire race on one set of tyres. I assume he's saying they figuratively could go for a whole race, but they'd still have to change at some point, don't they?
Yeah, and I think it's still three compounds. I guess the only difference is that the compounds are probably going to be a lot more sturdy this year, so the likelihood is they'll probably only make one pit stop, and that will be it, because they only have to choose, they only have to have two different tyre compounds out of the three they're selected. Rich?
Yeah, I mean, the biggest thing, I think, on the tactical side of things with the cars, obviously, it's changed. You've got more downforce, is how it's going to be in the rain as well. Because they're going to have bigger tyres, you would have thought they'd be dispersing more water. And with greater downforce, it should be more interesting to see. But then, is that almost what you want? when you look at Brazil last year, for example, with some of the spins and the saves, and I don't need to say much more, but it's going to be interesting to see the difference it makes.
Well, they've changed the tyres, haven't they, considerably? And they have had a bit of wet weather testing in Spain, presumably because they wet the track.
Yeah, they tried, didn't they? But they didn't really get much out of it because it was quite warm. It was drying quite quickly. But just an interesting thought about the point I made earlier on about the tyres being able to go for a whole race. Do you think that if... So I'm fairly sure that Lewis Hamilton's pit box is one of the first pit boxes you come to, isn't it? I think when you go into pit line,
I think it always depends on the track, doesn't it? He will get prime. The constructors' champions will get prime position,
first or the last. So, are we going to get a situation where Lewis Hamilton has gone the entire race distance on the same set of tyres, comes into the pit on his final lap, puts the same the next set of tyres on, and finishes the race in the pit lane? Do you think we'll get that?
Surely someone has actually made sure that can't happen. Like, there must be a rule that you have to complete at least one lap on a set of tyres. because that wouldn't be completing a lap on the tyres, would it?
No. So that's what I'm...
So if you maybe do that the penultimate and then you come around and finish the race if you yeah. can. But again, that would be pretty shit.
Yeah, if anyone knows, if they're listening, send us something on Twitter, let us know, because I'm interested to know whether or not that could reasonably happen.
And if it does, we will be ranting like hell, won't we?
One year, I can't remember what it was, but Schumacher at Ferrari, and he got given a 10-second stop-go penalty. And this was five laps to go or something. The rule said he had to take it within three laps, but he ignored that, and he got a warning for saying you have to take your penalty. And I think he ignored it again on the last lap. He pulled in, took it then, and of course crossed the line in the pit lane before anyone overtook him. And they said, "Oh, that's fine because your pit box was before the line." So it was that exact same kind of scenario, just with a stop-go penalty, and he was allowed and he won it. I can't remember what race that was, wow. But.
I tell you, if we'd have done a podcast after that race, the beeps would have been flowing. We love a good beep, as people will find out if they haven't been listening to the podcast much before. Okay, well, we'll have lots of chances for you to interact, subscribe, support us and sign up over the course of the season. Essentially, everything you need to know you will find at our website, nrf1.uk, or on our key social media channels. As I mentioned, they are Twitter, which is at the NRF1 as the handle, or Facebook, which is also the handle at the NRF1, or you can visit fb.me/thenrf1. Now, I did promise a shout out to Cesar Telisca. I hope I pronounced that right, Cesar. He is at Still Cesar on Twitter. He asked for a prize for being our 1,000th follower on Twitter. So we suggested a shout out, and there it is. And he's still following us as well. So great to have you on board, Cesar. Thank you for all your support. This is a message for you, our dear NRF1 listeners. In the last year, there is a young British startup that has shaken up the shaving industry. Over 100,000 men have joined Cornerstone and are now getting a smoother shave than ever before. It's a simple combination of great products, amazing customer support, free delivery, and fair prices that has made Cornerstone the fastest growing shaving company in the UK. It's basically shaving's equivalent to Max Verstappen. They've won numerous awards for their super sharp German engineered razor, just think Mercedes, and outstanding customer support, like a Charlie Whiting hotline, along with endless plaudits from the media, including GQ, Esquire, and the Daily Telegraph. That would be Max Verstappen again. Cornerstone know they need to earn your trust, though, so to let you try their award-winning razor for a fraction of the standard price, with this offer you can get £10 off their razor and get started for just £4. Just visit cornerstone.co.uk and enter the code NRF1 at checkout. Visit cornerstone.co.uk to find out what a smooth shave actually feels like, and if you don't like your Cornerstone razor, Cornerstone will even give you your money back, no questions asked. Now, let's get back to that NRF1 podcast, shall we? Okay, so testing. We've had one test. What have we made of it so far? What have been the headlines, the things that have caught your imagination? 4 days of Catalunian testing.
For me, it was the sudden extreme turnaround of fortunes for Honda and McLaren. What was?
That's known as sarcasm, everybody. Yeah, there was so much hope, and it all seems to have evaporated, and we've still got a test to go.
I saw the car on the release, and I was like, "That looks good. Have they got an engine?" And they were talking it up, and I was stood there.
Literally, have they got an engine?
Although they were stood there, it was quarter to midday or something. I was stood there drinking wine and all that, and I was thinking, okay, you obviously got high hopes if you're getting drunk already. And a few days later at the test, and
it might as well still been drunk.
You would have thought that I've got the guy's name, Zach Brown. I would have thought he would have probably been hoping he had a drink or two, because he'd probably been pretty few. So
go on, DT. I know this has been sort of simmering since we got here.
Yeah, so I'm not a big fan of the new McLaren livery. Actually, that's probably a bit of an understatement. And actually, my dislike for it has gotten worse. So when I first saw it...
it's not a grower.
Yeah, I watched the live reveal, and whoever set their cameras up was an idiot, because it made it look like it was a red and black car. And it was only until I saw the pictures later I realised it was orange, because they kept making references to this sort of the old colour scheme. I thought, that doesn't look like any of the old colour schemes. But anyway, the combination of colours could be so brilliant. You know, it's simple, black, orange, could be fantastic. We were talking earlier on, Renault have taken their colour of yellow and black and combined it together to make something that looks really damn good. But that just the shape of the colours that they've used and just the way that they've applied the use of the two colours together, it just looks cheap.
Damning from DT. All right, but that's the livery. I mean, they'll probably be more worried about the car.
Yeah, I'm sure that's kind of only sort of partially what's important about Formula One cars.
Partially.
I think, you know, it's pushed more of the same, isn't it? I'm hoping that now the token system has kind of disappeared, then maybe, you know,
Yeah, that's important, isn't it? Because now basically they can upgrade and update and improve their engine at any point without any restrictions as long as they go to Honda. If they want to get a move on, they can get a move on and do it.
Exactly. And they've been hamstrung by that system to a degree from the start. But I think they're still behind Renault, especially now apparently Renault are on par with Ferrari's power unit as well, which I know Mercedes have made advances now. They're saying it's probably over 1,000 horsepower combined power output. So it's still the Mercedes is still going to be the engine to beat. But yeah, it's just disappointing, isn't it? We keep thinking that they're going to improve, and I can't see them, at least not for the start of the season, I can't see them doing much better than they were before.
Well, they have got a history from back in the day of improving rapidly, so we'll have to hope somehow they dig that out of somewhere. Mercedes do look ominous, don't they, Rich? I mean, DT touched on it there, the power of the engine. Can you see, even Red Bull are kind of admitting they're going to be well behind at the start of the season. That's it, really, isn't it? And then, as we know, Valtteri Bottas is Lewis Hamilton's teammate. Away you go, lad. See what you can do.
Well, the one thing I think has stood out most, even though the Mercedes have looked really good and flawless, there's rumours and things I'd read where they're saying they haven't turned their engine up full yet because they're worried about reliability. And I think it was the last time they had some electrical problem or something like that. And you think, well,
Lewis can be as well. There's a bit of that.
is that going to be, you know, something in, you know, one of their weaknesses where it's great having a lot of power, but if it's got too much power for its own good, then it could cause you problems. In a way, I'm kind of hoping that is the situation. They can't turn their engine up full just so the rest of the field can come closer. But Ferrari have also looked quite impressive, I think, as well. It's been good so far from them, but they also looked good in testing last year and didn't really get anywhere. So I'm hoping still for the best that teams can catch up, and I'm hoping it's just, especially with like Renault and Red Bull, I think hopefully it's just them bluffing. I were going to be miles off, and suddenly it comes to the race and it's like, yeah, they're on it. But hope more than expectation, I think, is what it is.
I have a sneaking suspicion that Red Bull will be there or thereabouts. I think they'll be nipping at the heels of Mercedes. I don't think they'll be able to outright match their package, but I think they'll be able to give them a bit more of a fight than they have done, especially with their driver lineup, I think.
Please, God, let it be so. I mean, I don't know how much more that we can really touch on testing, because ultimately no one knows what... No one can compare what each team's doing, realistically. It's always a complete mishmash, and you always tend to feel that whatever you really comes out of testing, you have to treat it with a pinch of salt to a degree, and then you can only properly read it once the actual action gets going. That said, Lance Stroll crashing his Williams and knocking them out of running wasn't great, of course, and he'll be partnered by Felipe Massa, and he's already half retired and come back again, so quite knows where they'll be come this season.
Something though, Damon Hill, obviously I'm a big fan of, the previous you mentioned, but he put on Twitter and he was saying to people, give the lad time, give Stroll some time. Look at Schumacher when he first started, he had quite a few crashes, but when he got used to it, he was quick. So this lad, you know, bear with him a bit, and he's got to live up to the same expectations as Verstappen as well, because he's a similar age to him. So you just got to try and bear with him a bit, but it wasn't the best start.
No, not the best start.
It's the first test. It's his first, you know, he's had some mileage in Formula One cars, but not a great deal. And I think, wasn't it the case that the last Formula One car I drove was a 2014 car as well? So nothing like what they've got to drive now. And apparently the cars are a lot more physical. So yeah, so give him a break, give him some time, give him a couple of races, and I think he'll be reet, as they say here.
He'll be all right, boy. Looking across the rest of the grid, it's not too many changes, really, are there? And probably not too many changes. What we're expecting, we're obviously quite mouth-watering combination for a full year. at Red Bull with Max Verstappen and Daniel Ricciardo. That's how it's pronounced, everyone, for you new listeners. So we'll see how that goes. Ferrari, I'm not going to comment on those yet because I think Sebastian Vettel and Kimi Raikkonen, that will all be about when the real stuff begins, because maybe then we can get stuck into them a little bit more when we see actually how quick that car is. And I guess the one thing I did want to do is have a discussion over the best livery. So not McLaren.
Definitely not McLaren.
Best livery?
Special mention goes to Sauber for a big surprise with their livery. It looks pretty good.
So we'll describe it to us, DT.
So obviously, if we remember from last couple of years, Sauber have had that yellow and blue livery. But this year they've gone for something completely different. Is it celebrating, how many is it, 40 years?
25 years.
25 years of being in Formula 1. So to celebrate, they've gone with this new livery, which is a nice deep metallic dark blue with gold pinstriping and accents. A little bit of white on there, but mostly blue. This blue and gold looks pretty good. Apart from that black shark fin that we talked about earlier on that looks a bit off. I think if they'd have painted it all of that blue and put maybe some of the gold pinstripe across the top, it would have looked pretty good.
Attention to detail, that is.
Yeah. But again, going for someone else who sort of pulled it out of the bag and really surprised us, it was, and my favourite livery is Toro Rosso. They've had roughly the same livery for quite a few years. They've had that sort of hand-painted bull, which always looked really cool. And in some years, actually, they've had better-looking cars than the Red Bull. But this year, they've gone for that really quite vibrant blue with chrome sort of decals and some bright red accents to kind of go with the Red Bull Cola. And I think it looks the
there's my man. There's my man. How about you, Rich? Your favourite?
Yeah, I really agree with the Toro Rosso one. I really like the look of that. And it's great that, as well, every car on the grid looks different. The last few seasons, it's been a bit black and a bit grey, and I think it really does look good this season with a lot of them. Mercedes, I'm pleased to see they've gone with the more kind of turquoise kind of colour along the side, which is obviously the Petronas sponsor colour, I guess. Yeah, that looks
really
good.
Does look really good, doesn't it? I agree, it's a good point. Yeah, they've sort of stepped away from Red Bull as well, because those two cars still looked a little bit too similar, so all good. Well, you know, they're all the key discussions really, aren't they? The liveries and what have you. So it's worth saying that the next testing, we're recording this on Monday night, the next testing in Barcelona starts on Tuesday and then runs for 4 days. And then it is the Australian Grand Prix, which is on the 26th of March at, of course, Melbourne. This isn't all of our season preview podcast, because we'll have a predictions podcast to come. That's where we make our predictions collectively and all of us together. And we also have a great season preview with, I can announce now, Norfolk boy and former BBC Formula One presenter Jake Humphrey, who is of course now involved with Whisper Films, who do the Channel 4 production of Formula One coverage. So, and it was a really good chat, really lovely to speak to Jake, and you'll get to hear that over the course of the build up to the new season. Not a prediction, gents, but a tip for the new season. What are you looking forward to? Who's going to shine? What race? What change? What?
Ooh, that's a
good one to just ping on you like that, isn't it?
That would have been nice with a bit more preparation. I think this is going to be Max's year. I think last year he showed some stellar performances, but I think we might start to see an air of maturity start to develop. I don't think he's at his peak yet, but I think you'll start to see an air of maturity develop. And I think you could see potentially what I think is going to be a future champion start to really kind of come out, I think, with Max this year.
That's really interesting, because I do think he's a future champion. I think he's so exciting to watch. I just wonder if this is going to be a really difficult second season for him, and he's actually going to have to learn a few lessons, and maybe he's going to have to be more patient than he was when he was just breaking things down last year. That might be more of an issue sort of psychologically, but we don't know.
Again, that's why I say I think you'll start to see a bit of maturity come through. So he's had some success and he's shown the speed, but now I think you'll start to see just a glimmer. You know, he's still very young and he's still very early in his career, but I think you'll start to see an era of maturity come through now that he's been part of a big team. He's been in the sort of the limelight for quite a while. I think you'll start to see him starting to come of age a bit.
Rich?
I think something to watch out for is going to be the street circuits. Of course, we've got wider cars now, and we know Monaco, difficult to overtake. We've got Azerbaijan, of course, which is very narrow as well. these places are going to be, Azerbaijan failed to live up to its expectation last year. This year, I think it could be bigger now that everyone knows the track. But I think we could also see, if you, I think it was a 92 Monaco Grand Prix with Senna and Mansell, which of course everyone knows. I think it could be similar to that, where you maybe someone gets in the lead who isn't so quick, driving around a bit slower, with the tyres, you know, being as good as they're talking them to be anyway, and lasting a long time. That could be really interesting to see something like that. I think that could be something to watch out for.
Excellent stuff. I think, Red Bull driver partnership, I'm really interested to see. I think that's going to be fascinating. I think Ocon taking on Sergio Perez as well would be quite interesting. It'll be good to see how he competes there. But, you know, there may be all side issues to the fact that we'll see how Valtteri Bottas does in a proper car.
Yeah,
and maybe see what Lewis allows him to share in terms of data and things like that. Right, gents, I think we better wrap that up so we don't go over time too much. What I would say, if you want to get in touch with us, you can do it, of course, on our social media channels, but you're more than welcome to send us an email too. That is nrf1podcast@gmail.com. If you get a few minutes, check out our brand new YouTube channel. You can get through that to via nrf1.uk/nrf1tube. For our own take on winter testing. If you like karting and Formula One, then I'm sure you'll like the video too. Thank you very much, DT and Rich. Thank you very much for joining us. It's been a pleasure. Thanks to our proud partners, Grand Prix Racing Online. Make sure you sign up at gpro.net/nrf1. This has been the NRF1 podcast. We'll be back with our 2017 predictions. Until then, get your preparations ready for the start of the new Formula One season, because the countdown is well underway. Goodbye.